Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
With us on the line now is Neil Oliver, who studied archaeology before training as a journalist. He made his TV debut in 2002, presenting BBC Two's Two Men in a Trench, in which he and Tony Pollard visited historic British battlefields. Since then, he's presented shows like A History of Scotland, Vikings and Coast. In his latest book, Wisdom of the Ancients, he takes us back in time to grab hold of the ideas buried in forgotten cultures and early civilizations. Welcome to the show, Neil.
Oh, hello. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thanks very much for joining us. So I understand one of the reasons you wanted to write this book was to sort of find a bit of reassurance and reasons for some optimism in these strange times.
I did. I very much wrote it for myself, as much as for a wider readership. And I wrote it before all of the, you know, all the complications and anxiety of the lockdown and the coming of the pandemic. But even at that, even though I busied myself with the book before, I was aware at that time, last year, that the world just seemed to be heating up. And I'm not just talking about climate change. I mean, bad-tempered, lots of anxiety, you know, so many people depressed and worried and feeling hopeless, and life had no meaning. And I thought, why is this? Because by any metric, in the West, we've never had it so good. You know, wonderful medicine, medical advances, wonderful technology, limitless food and shelter and all of the things of life. And yet so many people were rattling with antidepressants and all the rest of it. And I thought, perhaps it's actually all this interference and white noise we've created for ourselves in the 21st century with social media and the torrent of news and data. And I thought, perhaps if I lift that away and consider how people 1,000 years, even hundreds of thousands of years ago, prioritized the things that mattered in life, I thought maybe there's some peace of mind to be had from remembering how people lived and thought for the longest time. And really that long-winded answer, that was the inspiration for writing this book.
Yeah. So did you find that there is a lot to be learned then from people of the past?
Very much so. I think when you strip away or look beneath the thin modern veneer, you get back to the things that we ought to, or that we inevitably do pay proper attention to when things get difficult. I'm thinking now about the lockdown, the first weeks and months of the lockdown. So here in the UK and elsewhere, we were pinned in our houses for 23 hours a day, and you know, only allowed out for an hour's exercise and so on. And so one person in each household basically would be nominated to go out and forage, as it were, to go out and get food, supplies, and bring them back to the home base where people were waiting, and there share it. And if you go back 4 million years to the time of the first family that we know about in terms of archaeological evidence, or if you go back 2 million years to the first house, you get that idea that people, even from other species, not just Homo sapiens, but earlier experiments with what it is to be human and alive, people were doing the same things. They were establishing a base or a camp. They were prioritizing the safety of family. They were gathering together and making sure that one another were looked after and fed and watered and cared for. And I think there's basic reassurance in being reminded of what really matters. Mm. And we can see what really matters by looking back at the ancestors. I also, as an archaeologist, I've always taken great comfort from the great age simply of the landscape around me. In Scotland, where I live up on the west coast, there's the stone circle called Callanish, which was built by Stone Age farmers 4,500 years ago. And the rock that they used is Lewisian gneiss, and unbeknown to them, of course, that rock is 3.5 billion years old. That's some of the oldest rock on the surface of planet Earth. So if you go to Callanish and put your hand on one of those stones, you will never again have the opportunity in your life to touch anything remotely as old. And I am reassured by being in contact with, or even just in the shadow of, rock that has always been there, that is here with me for my brief span of time upon the earth, and long after I am gone, that rock will still be there. And paying attention simply to the landscape, I think, not just the modern built landscape, but looking out at the natural landscape, is obviously something that the ancestors did. And they celebrated the landscape and the things that they built and the things that they did. And I find that helps to set my anxious modern 21st century clock and gives me a wider perspective.
Yes. It's fascinating to me to kind of get into the mindset of archaeology and things and try and work out about how we can go that far back. You know, we hear people saying all the time, oh, we can learn a lot from wartime, for example, and how people lived, you know, even 50 years ago. But once you start going back hundreds, if not thousands of years, you know, it must be very difficult to really find out how people lived and how the world was back as that.
It is very much, I freely admit, a lot. It's an exercise in imagination. You know, when I said that I wrote this book for myself as much as for anyone else, I, because of the things I'm interested in, you know, I was drawn to archaeology because if I visit somewhere like Skara Brae on Orkney, you know, the Neolithic farming village that was buried beneath the sand for thousands of years and then rediscovered in the 19th century. What I want to do when I go there is to imagine what would have been the sound of the voices, the people that lived there, you know, what language did they speak and what would have been the sound of their chatter? What would have the place smelled like? You know, these were people that worked all the time with animal guts and skinning and treating fish that they had caught. And, you know, and of course they didn't wash in the way that we consider, you know, to be appropriate. And the whole place would have been a three-dimensional experience in sound and smells. And these are the things that I try and imagine myself back into. But I think perhaps in line with what you're saying there and thinking, it is the case. Well, our species, Homo sapiens, is about 200,000 years old. And it came out of Africa between 200 and 300,000 years ago. No one's absolutely sure of the figure. And now here we are in this modern world that we've created for ourselves with internal combustion engines and rockets to Mars and smartphones and social media. But inside our heads, the 3 pounds of rosy pink meat that is our brains, it's still running the same software as the brains of our ancestors 200,000 years ago. Physiologically and cognitively, we're the same creatures. And our brains and our emotions and our cognitive ability, it hasn't caught up in any meaningful sense with the speed at which we have made the modern world move all the time. You know, it's our machines that are smarter, not us. And I think we need to give ourselves some slack in the rope and to remember that our thinking and our emotions and our motivations, ambitions and aspirations have not changed in 200,000 years. And we see it. If you go to, you can go to, say, the cave art in the caves of Lascaux in France and Altamira in Spain, and even here in Sheffield in England, and you can see that people, in unbelievably different circumstances, people fighting to survive on a daily basis, people dealing with realities like illness and disease and death, climate change, you know, they were at the back end of an ice age or whatever, and yet they were taking the time to go and express deep human emotion, because that's what you see in these unbelievable tableaux of lions and horses and mammoths that they created in the dark of those caves. And so far from just scratching a living and barely surviving, they were expressing elegant thoughts, big thoughts about what it meant to be human and alive in a kingdom of animals. And if they were able to contextualize themselves and see themselves as part of the bigger picture in their world, in their time, and in their difficult circumstances, then it's a reminder that, you know, that perhaps we should be better at doing the same thing.
Yes, absolutely. And when you envisage what it must have been like back then, do you think it would have been a good time to be alive? Do you think it would have been exciting or pretty scary?
I think it's always a good time to be alive. You know, the English writer Mervyn Peake said, to live at all is miracle enough. You know, your chances of existing on this little pale blue dot falling through eternity is, you know, talk about a chance in a million. But evidently, thousands of years ago, you know, you go back to, say the time of the first farmers, you know, who built the stone circles and some of the first big burial mounds across Europe and in the British Isles. They were thinking, they were looking up at the sky, they were considering how they fitted into the cosmos. They were seeing the patterns of the planets and the sun and the moon, the repeating patterns, the cycle of the seasons, the cycle of life. And I think the fact that they were making those expressions, creating those things in the landscape, suggests that their lives were rich, as well as being difficult, as well as being lives made of hard work in the absence of all of the modern medical techniques and all the technology that we take, for example. Their lives were about coming together as communities and as families and trying to work out the answers to big questions. You know, you don't go to the effort of creating something like a Stonehenge or an Avebury or the Karnak stones in Brittany. You don't gather hundreds of people together for years at a time to do something like that unless you're thinking. And so you ask, you know, was life good? Was it worth living in the past? I think evidently yes, because people were so fascinated and made to think by their own circumstances that they did these great things. And so there was obviously an intellectual richness that was there as people made their best effort to understand what it means to be human and alive.
Yeah, absolutely. It's wonderful to try and imagine, and your book certainly helps us do that. It's called Wisdom of the Ancients, Life Lessons from Our Distant Past, and it's by Neil Oliver, who we've been chatting to. Listeners can get a copy from our website, tre.radio. Neil, thank you so much for joining us. It's been lovely to chat.
It's been my pleasure. I hope to speak to you again sometime.
Thank you.